Icaros had not seen the sun all day. The leaf he carried loomed over his head, blanketing the industrious ant in shade. When the sun hit the leaf directly, the shadow turned a pale green, casting images of the leaf's veins along the path in front of him. But Icaros was indifferent to these quirks of the light. He observed them, but they did not delight or amuse him. All that mattered was getting the leaf back to his colony and setting out to grab a new leaf. The ant wove his way through the grass, following the scent of his brothers and sisters. There was always just barely enough food to feed them through the winter, no matter how much grain the workers harvested. He paused when he heard a strange sound coming through the thick blades surrounding him. It did not sound like a cry for help or a noise any of his fellow ants would make, but as it grew closer, he recognized it. It was music. The blades of grass parted in front of the ant, and an enormous insect leaped into the space before it. Icaros halted, ready to scurry away, but as he took a closer look at the thing, he relaxed. This was not one of his natural predators. It was just a grasshopper.
"Hello, friend,"
the grasshopper said, not stopping her incessant chirping music. Icaros nodded a terse greeting and started making his way around the large creature. The grasshopper smiled at the ant, mandibles twitching as it hummed along with its own tune. The ant did not smile, finding its way back to the path it was initially following. Icaros did not want to waste his time on the annoyingly chipper grasshopper. Such a carefree insect would not survive the winter. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every other Saturday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. And if you enjoy today's episode, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help. You can find more episodes of Tales, as well as all of Parcast's other shows, on Spotify and wherever you listen to podcasts. Today, we're telling the story of The Ant and the Grasshopper, one of Aesop's fables, a series of succinct morality plays from the 6th century BCE. Today's episode follows the original Greek version, but since these fables are only a few hundred words long, we've incorporated elements from various adaptations to flesh out the story. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of The Ant and the Grasshopper features depictions of starvation, violence, and disturbing imagery involving insects. Please exercise caution for children under 13. The Ant and the Grasshopper is one of 725 stories known as Aesop's Fables. While he was somewhat vague as a historical figure, Aesop is believed to have been a slave who developed an uncanny talent for storytelling. All of his fables are bite-sized morality plays with a clear theme at the center of them, the sorts of stories one tells their child from memory rather than having to crack open a book. Like many of Aesop's other fables, The Ant and the Grasshopper contains a moral that would weave its way throughout iconic stories in Western culture. Despite being under 200 words in its original telling, The Ant and the Grasshopper has been adapted into countless other art forms in the last 2,000 years. These include paintings, poems, educational books, and operas. And in 1934, it was finally adapted into a film as a Walt Disney-produced animated short. But arguably the most well-known version of this story is the feature film A Bug's Life, released by Pixar Animation Studios in 1998. This film depicts hard-working ants fighting back against the grasshoppers that steal their food every winter. But the Pixar film is far less bleak than the fable that preceded it. In the film, the grasshoppers are cruel thugs, exploiting the hard-working ants. In the original fable, the grasshopper is an innocent musician, naively playing the warm months away, while other insects wisely store grain for winter. Agda loved the summer. There was nothing quite like leaping from field to field, playing music for all to hear. Some liked the tunes she played, others did not. She felt no ill will toward any of her critics. Whenever she happened upon a group of termites or cloud of gnats that did not enjoy her chirping, the grasshopper simply moved on. This very thing happened to her one summer day as she flew through a meadow. She encountered an ant carrying a leaf and attempted to converse with him. He ignored her, impatient to get back to work. Ants were no fun. All work and no play. She did not understand how some insects could live their entire lives without taking the time to enjoy the pleasure of a summer day. As Agda hopped her way through the undergrowth, a shadow fell over her that made her pleasant demeanor falter. The sound was familiar. Looking up, she saw a moth looming over her. Inayo. She felt a chill run through her. As she watched, a bronze spider clambered over a nearby twig and crouched, peering at her with a cluster of beady black eyes. Eris. Inayo, the sphinx moth, and Eris, the jumping spider, always gave Agda the willies. They were named after the gods of horror and strife and were rarely seen apart. But they did not show themselves often. The rest of the insect world would sometimes go for years without seeing them. Their reappearance was always considered a foul omen. "Why have you stopped playing?" Eris clicked at Agda. "We came here to listen to your music." Agda wished she could hide her fear from Eris, but she found the spider's unblinking, eight-pointed stare unnerving. Inayo landed on the opposite side of the grasshopper, blocking the path behind her. He tucked his wings behind him, waiting. Agda stammered an apology, looking back and forth between the pair of them, and resumed playing. The spider and the moth listened intently. Agda saw the hairs all over Eris's body quiver with pleasure. When the song was finished, the spider's legs twitched, shaking the tune off like beads of dew. The moth unfurled his wings and fluttered back over to his companion.
"I do love a good summer song,"
Inayo crooned. Eris clicked.
"But a summer song won't last through the winter."
Without another word, these two terrible insects slipped back into the grass and were gone. Agda shivered and continued hopping along, trying to shake the discomfort itching along her carapace. As the summer wore on, Agda's ominous encounter with Inayo and Eris faded completely from her memory, even as the days grew shorter and the cold pressed in on their fields and burrows. Agda contented herself traveling from colony to colony, providing pleasant accompaniment for her fellow insects. As the fall months descended, Agda's path crossed with Krios, a cicada friend of hers. He was older than her and a much more experienced musician, but they made a good pair. Their duets filled the night air with song. One chilly August night, the two of them found themselves in a warm burrow, playing music to while the night away. The hole belonged to Lado, a scarab beetle who was particularly fond of their tunes. they spent the night drinking, eating, and playing. Lado did not make music himself, but he made up for it by being a terrific audience. He clicked and cheered at the end of every song, eagerly awaiting the next. In between songs, he struck up a conversation. It started as jovial small talk, but as the night wore on, the subject matter turned darker. Concerned, Lado asked his two musical friends what they planned on doing for the winter. Krios explained he had a plan all worked out. He was simply going to fly south when the winds grew cold. The two of them directed their gazes at Agda, awaiting her answer. Agda laughed heartily.
"Why do I need to worry?"
she said.
"It's still only autumn. I will deal with winter when it arrives."
She told her friends not to dwell on such morbid thoughts and struck up another tune. But as she played, her mind wandered back to the spider's cryptic words. "A summer song won't last through the winter." Moments later, their music faltered, interrupted by a light noise from the ceiling. All three of them looked up above. A muffled noise grew, pounding the ground over their heads. Rain. Krios and Agda looked to their host, eyes questioning. As if in response, Lado started scurrying for the entrance. The two musicians followed the beetle, praying that he had a safe place for them all to hide. But they were too late. As they reached the tunnel leading to the entrance, they were met with a churning wall of water. It smacked into all three insects, knocking them off their feet with one powerful blast. The water closed over Agda's head, blocking out everything but the thrumming sound of the current. She could not see her friends. All she saw were swirls of mud circling through the roaring abyss as she was thrown back and forth. Agda's legs flailed against the current, vainly attempting to break free of the water. She was turned left, right, head over wings, and finally thrown onto the ground. When we return, Agda must decide how to survive the oncoming winter. Now, back to the story. Agda struggled to stand, shaking her wings madly to clear the water from them. She saw her two friends, Krios the cicada and Lado the scarab, fighting their own waterlogged limbs nearby. Enormous drops of rain fell all around them, exploding against the dirt. Agda could not hop. The water was too heavy on her legs. She dragged herself inch by inch to a nearby rock and crouched in the narrow crevice within. She chirped weakly at her companions. One after another, they came to join her in the rock. Together, all three of them waited out the storm in this tiny safe haven. The next day, they took stock of their situation. Lado's burrow was gone, washed away by the rainfall. He lamented that he would have to return to the nearby farmland to gather enough food for the winter. He wished Agda and Krios the best of luck and lumbered away. Agda turned to Krios.
"How many winters have you lived through?"
she asked. Krios raised a leg in response. "One." This was his second. He would try his luck further south. He would do what he did before, living off of tree sap for the winter. He extended his wings and took to the air. Agda almost followed him, but she could not eat sap. She needed to find some kind of grain. Agda sat on the ground, watching her friend dwindle into the distance. Then she shook out her wings once more and took to the sky. She should still be able to find food. It was only autumn. Hunger found Agda sooner than she had hoped. As she glided through the air, she felt hollow. She didn't feel weak yet,
but she knew it was only a matter of time. If this was how quickly a lack of food affected her, it was going to be a long winter. She recalled, for the second time that day, the words of Eris, the jumping spider. A summer song won't last through the winter. Some insects believed that Inayo and Eris could see the future and showed up to watch gruesome fates play out for their fellow bugs. Agda did not necessarily believe this, but her own encounter with the moth and spider had given her reason to doubt. There was something off about them. A field loomed on the horizon. Agda chirped for joy. It looked like she would not have to worry about food after all. She fluttered her wings as fast as she could to close the distance between her and the meal. But as she grew closer, her optimism faded. Those weren't stalks of wheat she saw in the distance. They were spears held aloft by a phalanx of soldiers. She tried to slow herself, but it was too late. A gust of wind struck her from behind and carried her into the thick of the spears. She collided with a breastplate and groaned in pain. The shock wore off fast as a massive hand struck her, sending her spinning through the air. She righted herself as fast as she could, weaving in between the enormous bodies. Light flashed off their armor, blinding Agda as she tried to find a gap in the press of bodies. Finally, the air opened up around her. She landed in the field behind the regiment, twitching with exhaustion. But then, a voice greeted her. She looked up, but saw nothing but red and black. The field around her was strewn with human remains. Blood soaked through the soil, making it sticky to the touch. Above her, black smoke choked the air, raining chunks of ash as big as her head. One gently landed on her wing, and she flicked it off. The voice repeated its greeting. Agda looked around the smoldering field, trying to ascertain where the sound came from. Finally, her gaze found the bug that had greeted her. Amongst the ravaged flesh, a maggot wriggled happily. He introduced himself as Codmoose and asked her what brought her to the battlefield.
"I'm hungry," Agda explained, "and I'm searching for food."
Codmoose pondered this answer for a moment before replying. He told her there's plenty of rotting meat to go around if she wanted to join him for a meal. Agda declined. She appreciated the offer, but she did not eat meat. She needed to find some sort of grain. Wheat, barley, even straw would do at this point. The maggot's expression fell. He told her there was a farm here once, but the soldiers from Sparta had burnt the field when they won the battle and salted the earth where the crops had been. There was nothing but ash remaining, and no new grain would grow. Once again, Agda refused to give up hope. She started playing her music to herself, hoping to lift her own spirits. Codmoose listened to Agda's performance politely, and when she was done, he applauded. Then, as if struck with inspiration, Codmoose jumped in place. He told her that he remembered where you might find grain this late in the season. A few hundred cubits to the northeast, the ants were gathering food for the winter. They'd been harvesting fields all summer long. Surely they would have a few stalks to spare for a hungry grasshopper. Agda sighed at the prospect of turning around, but this was the only lead she had. The ants had shown her nothing but disdain every time she had encountered them. But maybe, just maybe, they would show mercy if they saw how weak she'd grown from hunger. Agda thanked Codmoose for his advice and took to the sky once again. Behind her, Codmoose buried himself back in his meal. But it wasn't long before Agda was faced with another problem. How would she even find the ants? Codmus had given her no description of their home, and most of them would have gone underground to gain shelter from the cold. Agda was so lost in her thoughts that she did not hear the monster approach. A current of wind buffeted her wings, sending her spinning out of control. She cast a glance behind herself. A sparrow was flying on her tail, beady black eyes fixed on the insect hungrily. Agda panicked, diving toward the ground as sharply as she could. The bird matched her movement, closing the distance with deadly speed. If Agda couldn't put something between herself and the feathered monster pursuing her, she would be its meal. Agda spied a barren thorn bush nestled close to the ground. She put every last ounce of strength she had into keeping herself ahead of the bird. But even that did not feel like enough. She could feel the creature's hot breath on her heels as it flew closer and closer. And then Agda slipped through into the comfortable safety of the brambles. The bird was too large to follow, crashing haphazardly into the thorns. It flapped and chirped madly, lashing out at Agda. Its beak clicked dangerously close to the grasshopper before the bird finally gave up. Bloody and ragged, it flapped off into the distance in search of some other poor insect to eat. Agda sat against a stem, breathing heavily. Now that the danger had passed, she had a chance to take in her surroundings. The barbs surrounding her curved inward, keeping almost all light from penetrating to the center of the bush. The twigs rustled with the wind, as if the whole bush was alive. The light that did get through cast wicked shadows everywhere, making this empty den seem full of crawling occupants. Agda's hunger grew in intensity. If she did not find food soon, she would be too weak to fly. She could hop for a while, she reasoned, but soon the ground would be too cold. Shaking this grim thought from her mind, she climbed down to the base of the thorn bush and hopped her way on. The scenery around her changed from menacing thorns to brown, prickly grass. She could feel damp in the air from the earlier rainstorm and feared that another deluge would not be too far off. Finally, the grasshopper saw what she had been searching for. Through a brown stem of grass ahead of her, a tiny black body wove its way along the earth. Creeping quietly, careful not to startle the fellow, she followed the ant. Soon she found what she had been looking for, a mighty olive tree. A line of ants ran up its entire length, in and out of a crevice in its bark, their home. Beside the tree was a pile of seeds and fibers. Ants were clustered around it, waving leaves at the grains to dry them. Agda saw her chance and hopped over to this group.
"Hello, friends," Agda said. "Did your food get caught in the rain?"
She received nothing but indifferent stares from the ants. She began again.
"Listen, my dear ants."
She addressed them all, not knowing whether or not they had a leader among them.
"Would you be able to help a poor grasshopper out? It is cold and I am hungry. May I have some of your grain?"
The ants stopped their work and turned to her. Their expressions were no longer indifferent. Now, they looked outright hostile.
"What would you give us in return?"
one of the ants replied. It looked like the same one she had encountered on the road earlier that summer. Agda replied, barely thinking,
"I'll pay it back to you with interest. On my honor, I will owe you my life."
The lead ant broke away from the rest of them and marched up to Agda, looking her up and down. Despite the difference in their size, Agda was certain this ant was looking down on her.
What were you doing all summer when you could have been gathering grain?
The ant asked.
I spent all my summer singing,
Agda said proudly. She would not apologize for her talent.
Well then, the ant said, spend your winter dancing.
With that, he turned back. The group of ants gathered their now dry grain and marched back into the tree, vanishing into the bark. Agda stared after the ants, her hope finally giving way to despair. A blast of cold air ripped across the field, shaking the branches of the olive tree. Agda shivered, then turned her back on the tree. There had to be someone who would help a poor, starving grasshopper. Crushed, she trudged back into the grass, eyes downcast. Up next, Agda learns just how deadly the winter can get, and the ants grow to regret their cruelty. Now, back to the story. Agda the grasshopper had never felt more alone. As autumn faded in the air around her, her hunger gnawed at her insides. The rain had driven her out of her scarab friend's house, and now the ants had refused to offer her any food. She had no idea what she would do. Perhaps she could go west and see if the bees would offer her shelter, but that would be a long, arduous journey, too much for her tired limbs. As the sun dipped low on the horizon, the grasshopper huddled by the side of a road, shivering. Agda was jolted out of her stupor by a wagon rolling by, wheels fitting perfectly into ruts on the dry earth. She hopped after it desperately. She could see stalks of wheat waving above the wooden bed of the wagon. If she could reach just one, it would be enough. She caught up with the wagon easily, but could not figure out how to mount it. She was too tired to fly, and the wagon wheels were constantly rolling. If she wasn't careful, they would crush her to death on the road. But she could not allow this opportunity to get away. She leapt onto the rim of the wheel, letting it carry her toward the lip of the wagon. A single stalk of barley loomed over the wooden ledge. If Agda could just grab a hold of it, she could pull herself over to the treasure trove that awaited her. She watched the stalk come closer, rubbing her hands together in anticipation. As it passed, she reached out and grabbed the grain. She almost laughed in relief as she gripped the coarse fibers. She would eat like a queen tonight. Then her whole world shook. The wagon went over a bump, throwing its contents into the air before crashing back down. Agda and the stalk of barley she had been holding onto spun through the air wildly before finally plummeting back toward the earth. Agda lay on the road, dazed, for what felt like a lifetime. When she finally awoke, she had food, but not much of it. The barley was a pittance compared to what had been on the wagon, or even what the ants had refused her earlier. She dragged the stalk to the side of the road and chewed on it bitterly. It was dry and delicious, but how long would it last? A day? A week? Soon she would be right back where she started, hungry and alone. Agda had been right to worry. In just over a day, she was hungry again. The barley, which had been a blessing at the time, now seemed like a postponement of the inevitable. The air grew even colder, and Agda found herself surviving by nibbling what remained of grass stems. They were not nearly nutritious enough to help her survive, but she could almost convince her body to digest them. As she was making her way west, she stumbled over what felt like a rock. When she looked down, she saw the lifeless shell of a cicada.
Her old friend Krios stared up at the sky with empty eyes. His carapace was dry and weather-beaten, so he looked like a ghost of his former self. Agda could not tell how her musical partner had met his end. He did not look starved or squished, just dead. The ground was too hard and dry for a burial, so Agda merely soldiered on. She cast glances back over her shoulder regularly until her friend's body was barely a speck on the earth behind her. She hoped he had not died alone. She would not wish this fate on any insect, even the ants that had so cruelly scorned her. Back in the ant colony, everyone was happy. The food they had gathered for the winter wasn't plentiful, but it was enough to survive. The queen of the ants, Dorcia, looked over her subjects proudly. Work never stopped, even when there was no more food to gather. Now her colony worked just as hard, sealing all cracks in their tree and making sure they would be warm and secure against the cold winter air. One of her workers, Icaros, had told her about the hungry grasshopper that had visited them earlier and how he had turned her away. Dorcia approved. If they started giving food to any insect who came begging, they would have none left for themselves. The ants were well fed because they worked hard. What had the grasshopper done? Played some tunes and hopped around all day? As far as Dorcia was concerned, that creature was not worth its own weight in grain. Dorcia's thoughts were interrupted when their entire home quaked. All the worker ants around her stopped what they were doing, looking about in confusion. Their tree would occasionally sway in the wind, or when large groups of men wandered by, but never this heavily. The walls vibrated. Her workers began to scurry about, bracing themselves. Dorcia called for them to be calm, but her voice was drowned out by the incessant thudding. Then a shining rock pierced the walls of her home. This tool was enormous and honed to a fine blade at the end. It withdrew from the wood before entering again, the walls splitting around it. One of her subjects was caught by the blade and split in two. He wailed in agony as the blade withdrew again, carrying his top half with it. Then it struck once more. The walls around her bent backward, away from the gash the axe had made. The roof above them was torn away as the entire tree they had been living in fell to the ground. The biting wind struck immediately, tearing grain from Dorcia's mouth. Ants scurried to and fro, trying to salvage what they could. Dorcia ordered them to gather by her and flee. Obedient to the last, her subjects obeyed and scurried out into the cold as one. Dorcia was glad to have her subjects around her. Their bodies shielded her from the wind, making their sudden exposure to the elements almost bearable. They made their way out into the barren meadow, trying to distance themselves from the men, now chopping their home up into firewood. Then a sandal came down dangerously close to Dorcia. Her subjects didn't have time to scream. Dorcia didn't pause to see how many of her fellow ants were crushed by this blow. She soldiered on, heading away from the commotion. Beside her, she heard Icaros scream at their ruined remains. But she did not look. She could not afford to lose her composure. By the time they had escaped the throng of men, her colony was severely diminished. Now merely a handful of ants. They had only taken a pitiful amount of their food with them and had no shelter from the biting wind. They needed shelter. They needed it now. As they passed through the field, something caught Dorcia's eye. She looked to the left and saw Eris and Inayo, the jumping spider and sphinx moth standing on a mound nearby. Their expressions looked pleased. Dorcia swallowed her fury at these two monsters and kept going. She would not give Strife and Horror the satisfaction of knowing how much she suffered. She thought she heard their laughs echo behind her, but she wasn't sure if she just imagined it. Night had fallen when the ants reached the beehive. As they neared the fissure of rock which held the hive, the smell of honey grew almost too powerful for Dorcia. She wanted their hospitality badly, so she could not afford a single mistake. She told her followers that only two of them would approach the entrance, a gesture of humility. Dorcia and Icaros approached the hive, heads bowed in supplication. They were met by a worker bee who looked them up and down, perplexed. Icaros spoke for Dorcia.
"Please, O wise and hard-working bees, would you grant us shelter for the winter?"
The bee hummed, considering. Then it responded.
"If you are cold, you should spend your winter dancing."
Dorcia stiffened with rage. How dare they refuse them hospitality when she had been so humble in asking? She turned away from the bees, disgusted. Where else could they go to find shelter? Who could take them in? Then her eyes settled on the ground a few feet away from the beehive. Lying on the barren earth was the lifeless shell of a grasshopper. Its hollow eyes stared toward the ants, front legs outstretched, as if welcoming them to their eventual fate. The original story of the ant and the grasshopper is as simple as can be. It tells of a grasshopper who grows hungry and is refused food by a group of hard-working ants who didn't spend the whole summer playing music. The moral is simple. It's better to plan for the future rather than spend all your time enjoying the moment. However, even this relatively straightforward moral has become the subject of intense debate. Some alternative readings propose that the ants are the villains of the tale for refusing to share their bounty with someone in need. This became a particularly popular reading among Catholics, notably French writer Jacques Melchior Villefranche, who wrote a sequel to the work in 1851 as part of an educational text. In this follow-up story, the ants have their food supplies destroyed and are refused shelter by a nearby hive of bees who remind the ants of their earlier selfishness. Wilfred Jackson's 1934 short film, made for the Walt Disney Company, cleverly mixes both readings of the story, making the grasshopper a sympathetic character who nevertheless deserves to be punished for being entitled to food he did not work for. An adaptation written in the Great Depression, it's a highly capitalist reading of the work. In it, the grasshopper must learn the value of working for a living, even if that work is just playing music for the industrious ants. Like Aesop's other fables, the ant and the grasshopper has endured because of how its theme can fit into almost any cultural tradition. Various versions of this story have recast the grasshopper as a cicada or a dung beetle, but the core conflict of the story never changes. But whether the ants are justified for withholding their food from a freeloading insect or callous villains turning their backs on someone in need is something the reader has to determine for themselves. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. Several of you have asked how to help us. Well, if you enjoy the show, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Join me in 2 weeks for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, with sound design by Carrie Murphy. Production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Freddie Beckley. This episode of Tales was written by Robert Teamstra. I'm Vanessa Richardson.